Malicious prosecution. It's taken more than a quarter of a century and millions of dollars, but Roseanne Beckett finally feels vindicated.
This will make the way much easier now for those coming behind me who have been wrongly accused and convicted, because it's horrendous. No words could describe how hard it is, and it's something I'll take to my grave. I was in jail for 3,652 days. What amount of money can compensate you for that?
Roseanne Beckett, who spent 10 years in jail for a number of convictions, most of which were later overturned. On Monday, the Supreme Court of New South Wales awarded her $2.3 million for malicious prosecution. Wendy Bacon is one of Australia's leading investigative journalists. She's currently a contributing editor with online publication New Matilda. She's followed the Roseanne Beckett legal saga for many years and was in court on Monday for the handing down of the ruling.
The case was heard in the up at Darlinghurst in the old Supreme Court. When I walked in, it was packed. First of all, packed with her supporters. Obviously, all the lawyers were there. Roseanne was sitting behind them. And I guess what was different is that all the media were there. And during the entire trial of this malicious prosecution case last year, I think other than perhaps one day, I was the only journalist there. So that made it really different. And then Justice Harrison came in. And actually, he spoke fairly quietly and very briefly. The words that people could catch was that he had awarded $2.3 million to the plaintiff with interest. Roseanne immediately broke down. And because her supporters, who are usually fairly vocal at the back of the court, really they had no idea what was happening then because, you know, she was upset. They couldn't hear anything. And so then everyone left the court and was really probably minutes later before people really understood what had happened. And then, of course, they only understood in the briefest possible way.
So clearly, when everybody left court, there was presumably jubilation amongst the Roseanne Beckett camp. Let's try and understand this decision in greater detail. Tell me, who is Roseanne Beckett? Where did she live and who was she married to at the time of the commencement of this extraordinary 26-year legal saga?
Well, the saga goes back really to 1983 when Roseanne had moved to Taree and she was successfully running a small business, a delicatessen cafe in Taree, which burnt down. She was then charged with arson by Detective Peter Thomas and she laid a number of complaints against him. Now, he was very, very angry about that. Now, a couple of years later, she married someone who knew Peter Thomas, a person called Barry Cash. Very quickly, that relationship broke down. He, in fact, suffered from mental illness. He was also violent and was hospitalised. So I guess that was, as Justice Harrison says in his judgment, Roseanne was living. She'd never been arrested. In many ways, she was just a very ordinary woman in an Australian rural town when these events began to unfold. She was, in fact, what we call no build on the arson charge. She did not burn down those premises, but that rubbing up against Peter Thomas led him to form a really, really vengeful approach to her, which has determined so many events in her life.
So in the late 1980s, she was charged with a number of offences against her husband, Barry Catt. I know they're complicated, but can you just spell out what they were or the flavour of them?
Yes, well, it was 26 years to the day yesterday when about 8 police stormed into her house early in the morning. She was charged with a couple of charges of assault. She was charged with perjury. She was charged with possession of a pistol, attempting to poison her husband with lithium, stabbing her husband, and also a couple of charges of approaching people and offering money in return for them killing Barry Catt. So, you know, there was an avalanche of charges, and that has been one of the biggest problems with this case because it was always very complex and hard for both lawyers, anybody really, to get their head around.
So she goes on trial. She's found guilty of all these charges, I think, except one. She's sentenced to 12 years jail. How long does she stay in jail?
She stayed in jail for about 10 years.
And you actually met her in jail, didn't you?
Yes, I met her and along with another journalist, conducted a very long interview with her over a couple of days. And it just happened that at the end of 99, both the ABC's Four Corners were doing a program about Peter Thomas and his career, which involved a number of false arson charges. At the same time, another journalist and myself, Tracy Pillemer, for Fairfax at the time, were in the prison researching an article about women in prison. That point. And we came both out, I think, in October 2000 with major exposés about Peter Thomas.
Throughout her incarceration and following her release, she tried all avenues to overturn the conviction. That actually ultimately took place in 2005. How were her convictions overturned?
That inquiry in 2005 was established to, if you like, find new facts in the case. And that judge, Justice Davidson, found that it was likely that evidence had been fabricated against her and other things had gone wrong with the case. So that then went back to the Court of Criminal Appeal to hold a new appeal. And it was a 2-1 decision. And she was acquitted of one charge. I think 5 were dismissed and 2 were upheld. So the case was left in a very messy state at that point.
So 2 convictions remain.
2 convictions remain. They've never been properly dealt with. They've never been, sort of, if you like, central to the proceedings.
So in 2008, Roseanne commences an action for malicious prosecution. What exactly is an action for malicious prosecution?
Well, the words in a way are self-explanatory, that it means that with malice, there's several things you've got to prove. First of all, that the particular case was conducted with malice, and secondly, that there was no reasonable basis for the charge. Either the prosecutor had no honest belief, or if he or she did have an honest belief, that it was not based on reasonable grounds. And as Justice Harrison said, notoriously difficult to prove.
And the authorities in New South Wales fight tooth and nail this civil action. Indeed, it goes all the way to the High Court. Why did it go all the way to the High Court?
The Crown took advantage of a very old High Court case and argued that Roseanne had not had the cases decided in her favour because they'd only been dismissed and she hadn't been acquitted. But she won the High Court case, and that re-establishes that under malicious prosecution law in Australia, if the cases are decided in your favour, you can sue for malicious prosecution.
So you don't have to prove your innocence as such.
No, you don't have to prove your innocence. Obviously, it's a huge help if you are acquitted, but of course, you know, there can be all sorts of reasons why people aren't acquitted. It could just be that the case fails and it's dismissed.
So what is the test? I mean, Justice Harrison says that it's extremely difficult to establish malicious prosecution. What are the limbs of the legal test that you have to satisfy?
Well, there's 2 big issues, really. One is that you have to establish that the prosecutor, in this case Peter Thomas, backed up by another detective, Detective Padgett, acted maliciously. That is, that they were prepared to use the legal system for an improper purpose. Now, Justice Harrison found that Roseanne did establish that, and so that was found. But it's much more than that. That's not enough. You then have to either establish that the prosecutor didn't have an honest belief at all in the case, or that perhaps they had an honest belief, but there was no objective, reasonable basis for that belief. So as you can see, it's quite a complicated thing. I think most people would think, oh, well, if someone's driven by an improper purpose, surely that's, you know, really bad, and that should mean that the case can't be sustained. But that it's not like that.
Ultimately, the judge found that the test was satisfied in relation to some of the charges, but not others.
That's right. In 2 cases, she did prove it. Look, I don't think anyone probably realistically ever expected she would win on every charge. She goes, because the judge himself says that the key prosecution witnesses were not brought to be cross-examined. So that part, you can't sort of draw out evidence from them. So, you know, yes, only 2 of 6.
Justice Harrison was satisfied on 2 counts of 6 and found in her favour and awarded her $2.3 million.
That's right, yes, plus interest, which has to be calculated, plus the plaintiff got costs. And, of course, the costs are huge because there was a senior counsel, there was two junior counsels for much of the time, there was, you know, the solicitors, so very high cost. Probably the costs, I imagine, would be higher than the damages.
You followed this case for close to 20 years. What does this extraordinary legal saga tell us about the justice system?
Look, I think, Damien, that I keep going back to the fact that way back in 1989, a solicitor called Michael Jones, who was Roseanne's solicitor, wrote to the New South Wales authorities saying that this case was the basis for an abuse of process case. There was all sorts of complaints laid at the time. Some of these things you could just see did not make sense. And so to me, the system completely fails when it takes 26 years to get to the point when someone can look at these two particular charges. And when you read the judgment, you can see it doesn't take rocket science to reach that conclusion. You know, there's something really wrong. And in other jurisdictions, particularly the UK, for an example, but even in Australian jurisdictions, it does vary. There is a system where you can actually do an investigation, an inquiry into a case. And this should have been done in this case probably as late as 1992, 93, when the appeal failed. There was evidence there. But she, of course, had no lawyers. So there needs to be a place that people can go where people will review cases. And as we know, also overseas, there are examples where that can happen.
Roseanne Beckett yesterday in her press conference spoke about the extraordinary resources which the Office of Public Prosecutions in New South Wales pushed into this, fighting it every step of the way, taking it to the High Court before the High Court overturned the precedent in her favour and sent it back to the New South Wales courts. What's your view of the way the OPP, the Director of Public Prosecutions at their office, handled this over many, many years?
In some cases, of course, it's the DPP, and then in this case it became the whole Crown, the State of New South Wales. Look, I was pretty amazed in 2004 after a Supreme Court judge made a whole lot of findings of fact. And when we went back to the Court of Criminal Appeal, I expected that they would be accepted, but no, they said they rejected all of that. She was just as guilty the day she was charged, and they fought that. Look, I think going to the High Court legally, there was a case there, you know, I can a little bit more understand that. And then when we went to this, they fought the malicious prosecution. There could have been a settlement. It would have saved the taxpayer a lot of money if there had been a settlement. And then we go to the malicious prosecution, and they had senior counsel, two barristers, sometimes two solicitors sitting in the court, and they were just fighting it like nothing had happened, like no one had found that Peter Thomas had been corrupt. No one had previously found that he had stood over witnesses. And that, I think, is just an irresponsible use. Now, the lawyers themselves don't see it that way. One of them said to me yesterday, it's just another case. But, you know, at a certain point, you have to look at it and see how is justice best served here. And justice was not best served fighting this for 26 years.
Justice Harrison's decision, it's 134 pages. What do you make of it?
Look, I think it is a very, very cautious judgment. Look, it's very hard to look into the mind of a judge because already the Crown have indicated yesterday that they may appeal. And I'm sure, look, he can look at Roseanne. She's 68. She's a different person. She's even a different person than she was in 2004. And she's hasn't been well as well. Look, I'm sure that he's thinking, how can I get a judgment that maybe the Crown will accept and they won't appeal? Because if they appeal, this will go on for years and years. So I hope that by doing that very, I think, conservative judgment, I don't necessarily agree with every word of it, but I can see where he was trying to sort of come up with something that perhaps was acceptable. And of course, you're honestly dealing with the evidence at the same time, in his view.
He was very careful and thorough in his reasoning. But on the last page, he does say some very strong things about Detective Sergeant Peter Thomas, who died last year. What does he say?
Well, he says, first of all, that it had been said that he was a bully, that he had stood over, you know, a large number of witnesses, lawyers, family and community services people who were trying to deal with a child abuse case that he wanted to get stopped, let alone sort of the ordinary, very vulnerable person out there. Roseanne's son was absolutely terrified on the night of her arrest. And the thing is, these people people remain terrified for many years. So, you know, he does come back to that at the end, and that's the malicious part of it. In this case, Justice Harrison was only dealing with this very narrow set of facts. It's voluminous, but it is narrow. But beyond this case, there are numerous people whose lives have been destroyed by Peter Thomas's bullying tactics, and nothing has ever been done to investigate those cases. And if anyone wants to look at those cases, they only have to go back to our original stories and the Four Corners program. And I do remember talking to one of the journalists who worked on that Four Corners program, and we expected at the time there would be a major inquiry, but instead, you know, everyone just moved on. And so here we are, 2015, and all those people, their lives were very, very badly damaged.
Wendy Bacon, thank you so much for speaking to the Law Report.
Thank you, Damien.
Investigative journalist Wendy Bacon, currently a contributing editor to online publication New Matilda.